From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. I'm glad to be back. I've been gone for a few weeks, and it's always nice to return, especially with my next guest, you know, Blink from blinkoncrime.com. She's a little under the weather tonight. Thankfully, she's not under the rubble. You felt that earthquake, did you?
It happened today. I'm no longer an earthquake virgin.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, there's a few jokes there, but this is a family show, so I'm not going
to... I had to throw you off. You've been out for a couple of weeks. I wanted to see how you'd recover.
Oh, no, I'm sharp as a tack, as always. But anyway, listen, I'm glad you're okay. It's kind of creepy. And just to talk about that for a minute, did you see any of the news coverage? Like, everyone was going nuts.
I didn't see any of the news coverage, but basically it was because I was just trying to get myself, you know, righted, if you will, with my resources and locally, because you have to think of it from our perspective. We don't see this.
Sure, yeah.
So we're pretty much, every one of our phone lines was busy. You know, every one of our IP sites were down and things along those lines. So you're kind of really in the dark, and it was humbling. I mean, I've been there before with 9/11, but, I mean, certainly... I didn't even know it was, as I told you, I didn't know what it was until probably about half an hour after the fact.
Yeah.
Because we've never had it. But, I mean, it was wild.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, you feel your house move underneath you and be like, what the?
You know, I think the closest thing I felt to that is getting angry watching Geraldo and Jose Baez having an interview and everything starts to shake. But that's not an earthquake by any means.
That's the kind of shaking that just goes on in my head.
Listen, speaking of that crazy, wacky case, Miss prima donna Casey Anthony is going to have to serve her probation. Well, duh. Let's talk about that for a second. It wouldn't be a Blink interview without talking about the Anthony case.
I was just going to say to you, wow, it's so nice to not talk about the C word. But you know what? You're right. It deserves some conversation. I hate to say this, but I called this. There was no way she was getting out of that. And probation is probation.
Yeah.
And it was just because it was a clerical error, that it was a audible motion that was read at the bench and apparently was not transcribed correctly. It is what it is. And more than that, her defense attorney, Jose Baez, has no right to have his client serving probation against that order. And I'm going to predict something right now.
Okay.
I'm going to predict that this is going to get him in hot water with the bar.
Good.
Again.
No, is this the legal bar or the bar across the street that they go celebrate at each time?
One and two of his destination, yes.
Yeah, well, I think so, and I think it's about time. And how crazy is it? Even up here in left-wing Canada, you serve your probation when you're out of jail because that's an extra punishment. And how do you serve probation while you're serving custody? That's nuts.
Well, exactly, and that was the state's point. Listen, if I'm she's in solitary or segregated confinement, that's not probation. The point of probation is to see how you function.
Right.
Outside of your conviction and meet your, you know, commitments as it relates to that. And, you know, they were asking for administrative probation, and I was like, what? This girl is a six-time convicted felon, and I don't care how, you know, you can say that, you know, she's concerned about her security all you want, but then I'm going to tell you what. In the state's reply, they're going to say, okay, well, how does her picture get smashed from Columbus, Ohio, you know, all over TMZ. I'll tell you how. They provided it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, enough.
Yeah.
I just, the upcoming Dr. Phil with Cindy and George, this is what I've told everybody. Put your money where your mouth is.
Yep.
Be prepared to not use products that you love if they're going to, you know, have a media purchase during that show. But more than that, don't watch it.
Yeah.
It's the only way to make a statement. And I don't mean tape it and then watch it. I mean, I'll tell you right now, and I'm going to talk to Red about this and Clissend. I don't want a link to that program on my site.
No, I
agree.
I agree.
I don't care. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to see it. I'm not interested in anything they have to say. The rumor is that they were paid nearly $500,000 to their foundation for this interview. That, to me, from a psychiatric professional, and I use the term loosely at this point, from Dr. Phil, I think Dr. Phil needs a Dr. Phil.
I agree. No, I agree. It's unbelievable. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. Let's talk a little bit about Robin Gardner and this Giordano character, and of course Aruba, and then we're going to get into West Memphis. Lots to talk about since I've had you on last. Aruba, you know, as many shows as we've done about Natalie Holloway, and as much as we've done and talked about Aruba, here we got a creepy case. In fact, even the you mentioned TMZ, the Radar Online's of the world, are now reporting that Gardner knew this guy for a few years. This isn't just a recent relationship. How accurate is that? I don't know, but let's talk a little bit about Aruba and this most recent disappearance.
I don't know that she knew him for a few years. If she did, it was casually, because my information, and I have not covered this case because of the other things going on.
Sure.
But it's my understanding that she had a live-in significant other, and this situation came out of a $1.5 million insurance policy. I mean, this guy's in some trouble. And I don't know the length of that, but I think it's under 6 months. So I'm not really clear on, you know, how that factors into this. But what I want to say, and this will surprise you, because you know I'm not a fan of Aruba for obvious reasons.
Right.
But I think that so far they've done it right in this case. And I want to walk away from this, and you know, I want to say to Scared Monkeys, I want to say to you, and I want to say to Beth and Dave, I want to say, I surely hope that they learned their lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't change anything for Natalie. But I feel that they did their diligence. The way that their law works over there is very different than ours. In fact, in the States, nobody would have been able to hold that guy.
No.
Because their presumption is kind of front-loaded, if you will. They get to be suspicious of somebody for a while, for a time period, and then if they don't have any facts, then, of course, they get released. It's very different than our system. But I think that I'm very concerned that they're going to find her, because I don't think he's a dummy.
No.
And I think that's kind of been the trend. But I think that, you know, I don't know what her personal situation is. I have a concern. You know, this case reminds me, Dana, and I'm going to take you back. I don't even know if you covered it, but do you remember the case of Lisa Buchanan and Christ Cooley?
Mm.
It was the doctor in Nashville, Ohio.
Yes.
Okay, who ended up, there was a, his Lisa died of an overdose.
Yep.
And there was a sex tape that the jury actually watched, and it was the end issue was whether or not he shot her up, because then he would have been found guilty of first degree murder.
Sure. Yep.
As opposed to what he was. But this, there's such a parallel. He's deceased, by the way, not to leave your readers and viewers hanging. He died of a heart attack in 2010. So technically speaking, he was never convicted of that crime, because once you die in the appellate process, if you're not available to defend yourself, it goes away.
Right.
In
yep.
the States.
Yep.
But it really reminds me of that.
Yeah.
A weird kind of dependency, you know, sexually motivated type of issue.
You know, we could blink from Blink on Crime is here. You know, I can remember covering Aruba many times and complaining about their system. And now I agree with you. This guy would be walking around North America right now. So there is a bit of a benefit. Nobody can understand the Aruban system, 8 days for this and 10 days for that and all that kind of crazy stuff. But I want to send this a little bit before we get to West Memphis about the Giordanos that are out there. I know innocent and proven until proven guilty, but these resort islands, the guys with the cameras, the guys with a few bucks that are prowling the beaches, the predators, if you may, that are out there, and just how many do we see, and how dangerous are these places?
Well, let me tell you why they're dangerous, and it has to do with what I will call the ripple effect of the Casey Anthony case. And I'm singling that case out because it does have the exposure that it does.
Yep.
I've commented on this since then, and that is we are in a state of what I'll call the CSI effect. And it's a problem because people that are, you know, true crime has one of the largest viewer bases and human interest bases there are. And we want that mm-hmm. as advocates.
Yep.
We do. But the problem with that is people get in the notion that, you know, cases are solved with, you know, almost like a snapshot of the crime, of the perpetrator, of the victim, of what happened in an hour long show, less commercial segment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not reality.
No.
There's so few cases that are tied in a bow like that. And our judicial system doesn't even support that. And I think as our prosecutors go, we're going to have to talk more diligently about what we expect from a jury, because we learned that from the Casey Anthony case and the weight that circumstantial evidence has as opposed to, you know, physical and direct evidence. We need to be sure that our juries understand that. But moreover, to your point, I think that if I'm a criminal, I'm going to look at where the holes are.
Yep.
And I'm going to take my chances. If I'm desperate and I'm looking to commit a crime, specifically whether it's, you know, a personal relationship or in this case it looks like to be financially motivated, I'm going to go where I don't think people care. And, you know, I guess I'm kind of going back on my earlier kudos to Aruba, but if you think about it, if I was going to think about a jurisdiction that didn't care about a tourist, I might go there.
That's it. Yeah. No, for sure. Blink.
So that in that way, that's what I have a concern, where you go, whether you go to George Smith and international waters and, you know, cases along those lines. There's no question in my mind, if somebody's being diabolical, those are probably at the top of the location list.
Yep. Yep. The creeps will go there. That's for sure. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. Kudos to you and your coverage of West Memphis. What a story, although not seen as much in mainstream media as it should have been. It is fascinating. Let's do a Reader's Digest as far as what went on, what's going on, and what may happen.
Well, Dana, strangely, there's very few cases I can say of this notoriety that I didn't know anything about
right. Going
into it, and I admit that up front. I didn't. I had no bias. And I was asked by an associate of the publicist of Johnny Depp to take a look at it with the understanding that I would produce my findings, whatever they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I will also admit I was the one going into it, you know, let's face it, Eddie Vedder,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Depp, you know, I want to be friends with them.
Sure.
But on a serious note, I expected on the surface and the way that we investigated the case, we went through, you know, 18 years of transcripts first. So that's how I do, you know, kind of you have to separate or bifurcate what the legal issues might be as opposed to the investigation and the actual facts and evidence of the case. And when I got done with that part, I was pretty sure, you know, there was jury misconduct in one of the trials, that there was significant mistakes made by investigators and the prosecutors that would never fly today. And that's really one of the challenges in looking at an 18-year-old case. You know, my lenses are 2011. So to go back and see what was applied, it's going to look skewed to somebody like me. So I tried to kind of consider other casework in the day. And I knew that there was some DNA tests that had been returned that the defense was saying certainly exonerates or exculpates the West Memphis Three, which is Damian Echols, Jason Baldwin, and Jesse Miskelly. And as we know, just because we don't, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, just because we don't have a videotape or a DNA profile that points to these individuals, it does not exculpate them or exonerate them.
Sure. Yep.
Because there are several partial profiles which include them. And that's one of the problems with this case. There's very little of that. You know, when you talk about what you can present in front of a jury, you can't say, well, guess what? Out of, you know, 21 alleles of a DNA helix profile, four of them are shared by two victims and one suspect. So if we, you know, and that was tested in 1993. So if we apply today's possible techniques, is it possible that we could produce that result that we're all looking for possible. But to your point, in the face of this, these DNA results came back. There was more pending, which resulted in what was a new evidentiary hearing. And I can't say, having looked at all of the work, all of the pleadings and filings and what I think are some of the mistakes, I don't think that was unwarranted. I really don't. In fact, by the time I got done looking at the whole case, I almost welcomed it.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the sake that I think a lot of people think. Not for the sake that I wanted to exonerate anybody, but because I think today's techniques and the way that the order was written by the Arkansas Supreme Court, it allowed both sides, the prosecution and the defense, a second bite at the apple, if you will. It specifically said, we're going to look at all evidence, whether it was presented at trial or not. And through our work, we actually developed what we think is the, sadly, the murder weapon, which was completely glossed over by the law enforcement and by the prosecution. 3 days later, there's a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coincidence or not?
I don't know. Yeah, and I want to ask you this question because we've all seen the stories and covered the stories. We're comparing 93 to 2011. Is it just gross incompetence? Is it cover up? Is it, what was it? Was it just shoddy police work? I know that's a pretty wide open question for you.
Yes, 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 and yes. Except I want to say I don't think there was gross misconduct on anybody's part.
Okay.
I think that, you know, whether it's appropriate or not, when you have a case, and I'm guilty of this myself, when you have a case where you have 3 8-year-old boys that were tortured,
yep,
Dana, there is no stretch of the imagination that's going to say that they weren't, based on their wounds, their time of death, the crime. I mean, I could go on. They did. They knew what was happening to them, and it was diabolically brutal in the worst possible way. So when you have a case like that, and you have a small jurisdiction, which is, you know, poverty-stricken,
yep,
by all accounts, there's no separation of classes in this. The little boys did not have really a better lifestyle than the suspects. And you have a very small area with detectives and a precinct that are investigating a crime. They're not trained like what I'll call the zero to hero case, where you have, you know, you're doing, you know, people are knocking down 7-Elevens and you're looking at videotape, and all of a sudden you have a crime with national footage, and specifically you have HBO in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
This is another one. I don't care what anybody says. I'm so over this checkbook journalism. That's exactly what happened.
Absolutely.
You can't tell me when you have hundreds of thousands of dollars to throw in a community where most of the parents of the suspects are living on disability, have been incarcerated for drug addictions, and the like. That is, you know, that's a leprechaun.
Sure.
And it affects the way the community who was not sequestered looks at the case. And I'm kind of over people glossing over that, because while I think the intentions were pure on, the HBO producers going into it, once you have a checkbook out there, you can't say that you know what the true outcome is.
Right.
With this case, I think that law enforcement made mistakes. I think I also think they did a lot right that could be perceived as mistakes in 2011, specifically. You know, I kept hearing this, and one of the reasons why this was important to me was I heard, oh, you know, Damian Echols was singled out because he wore a black trench coat, and because he was a Satanist, and because he was different, and, you know, we as rock stars, we can relate to this because, and I'm paraphrasing here, but because, you know, we practice in our basement and our parents were going to kick us out for 10 years.
Sure.
And then we made it big. So at one time in our life, somebody thought we were losers and we didn't end up to be. I get that. I do. But if you look at the case, Damian Echols specifically had significant psychiatric problems for years. He was in a hospital for psychiatric, for homicidal, suicidal, sociopathic, and different ideations, manic depression, for 18 months straight prior to this crime.
Right.
And so what I wanted to dispel up front is, stop saying anybody was singled out, because that's not accurate. There were specific reasons why the finger was pointed at them by a probation officer, who, by the way, was the probation officer for all three of these guys.
Right, yep.
Who had been in the system, you know, for 6 years. What's a 16-year-old in the system? You know, Jesse Miskelly beat up a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
The months before this. They weren't nice guys.
No.
And that said, so you have attorneys that are paid well. They'll tell you that they weren't paid, but the clients were paid into a trust, which was used to pay them. So guess what? You don't get to say you're an appointed defense attorney when all your expenses are being met.
Yep.
And again, it goes back to, were these individuals capital defense attorneys? No.
No.
They were the Jose Baez's of 1993, without the benefit of being able to, you know, to march 11 different qualified attorneys into their jurisdiction.
I was just about to say that.
Right.
Listen, we're running out of time. We got about a minute left, and we'll have you back on when you're feeling a little bit better. But really, the bottom line in this story is, and you talked about the checkbook journalism, is to cover a story like this the right way. What do the HBOs and the 48 hours and those need to do the right way?
You can't pay defendants in a criminal case.
No, I know.
For interviews. You can't pay the family. You can't pay or have it out there that the jury might get paid. There has to be a level of standard that is applied in an ongoing criminal case. It can't be, you know, we rely on the Son of Sam law that once you get convicted, you know, this could happen. You can't mix media interest and human interest and, you know, media purchases and promotions with criminal cases. You just can't, because it's got to come back to, you know, Scott Ellington, and I'm not pointing any fingers, the prosecutor in this case was elected last year. This is an 18-year-old case. He unilaterally came in and cut a deal with these defendants. And to date, Dana, and this might be, you know, this is a conversation for another day, I've had three attorneys from Arkansas who are Supreme Court rated that have said to me, in their 30-year practice, they don't see where this is even legal.
No.
So what is the real issue? I don't have the short answer, but I will stay on it. These people are free. They are under a suspended sentence, which results in them having a level of probation to a degree, meaning if they get in trouble again, you know, they'll go to jail for 21 years. But the point is, they're out, and in my mind, with our work, they committed this crime.
Yep.
And I'm not quite sure how to reconcile all of that, but, you know, we have work to do on it.
And you know, for those that are listening, you go to blinkoncrime.com. There you won't find checkbook journalism. You'll find what, like they say in the movies, the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Listen, you go have a big drink of NyQuil or whatever, and watch Jay Leno. He usually puts me to sleep and get healthy.
Great, Dana. Thanks. Welcome back.
Talk to you. Bye-bye. That's Blink from Blink on Crime. And, go to blinkoncrime.com and learn about this West Memphis case. It's fascinating. And she grabs those stories and she runs with them, that's for sure. Speaking of high-profile reporters, Diane Diamond from Entertainment Tonight and someone who's been in the crime reporting business for a long time will be here in a few minutes. And we're going to continue talking about Aruba and Frank Bender. You're going to say, who's Frank Bender? Well, once we start talking about him, you'll know. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. It's always a big kick to have Diane Diamond on the program. Check out her webpage at dianediamond.com. You see her on Entertainment Tonight. She's been in the business, as they say, for a long time. She's covered all the stories, and it's always fun to have her on. Hi, Diane.
Hey, how are you? Nice to talk to you.
I'm good. Nice to talk to you again. I want to talk a little bit about Frank Bender. Now, when I did the intro to your segment, I would say a lot of people may not know who Frank Bender is. You've written an excellent article on him. Anyone that spent 5 minutes watching America's Most Wanted with John Walsh will know who Frank Bender is. I knew as soon as I saw the name who that was. But let's talk about Frank Bender and how important he was to putting a name to those that were missing or those that were found.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad you're talking about this. I really am. Frank Bender is one of those guys who operated for years and years in the shadows. He called himself the recomposer of the decomposed.
Yep.
And what he did was he was given the skeletal remains, mostly the skull, of an abandoned body. And police departments across the country, he started in Philadelphia, but across the country and then across the world and Canada, would say to him, who was this person? We have their skull. Help us figure it out. And he had developed this fabulous, very thin clay on clay on clay on top of the skull way of making their faces come back to life.
And when you saw that process, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no,
when you saw that process done in several segments, again, that I saw in America's Most Wanted, mm-hmm. and others, and talking to correspondents from America's Most Wanted on my program, again, shame on Fox for canceling it. But
Yes, I'm with you.
That's another story for another time. It was a fascinating process, and here was a guy that just wanted to help. He wasn't in it for the fame.
Mm-mm. Not at all. In fact, he did this very painstaking work on each skull, and it didn't matter to him if they were black or white or whatever, but he did have an affinity for children.
Sure. Yeah.
Children's bodies who had been abandoned. And at the very most, I think he made $1,500 or $1,700 at the very end of his life. The process is unexplainable. He would put thin strips of clay over the skull. But then somehow Frank Bender knew from other evidence in the cases what else to add on the skull. For example, there was a beautiful young woman who was found in a creek bed in 1954, and he just knew that she had big blue eyes. So he put blue eyes on his reconstruction, and by golly, the ID came through.
Yeah.
Some people came forward and said, oh, my gosh, that must be Dorothy Gay Howard, our missing aunt and cousin. And all these years later, they solved the crime because he thought she had blonde hair and blue eyes. How did he know that? I don't know.
Right.
There was a woman named Rosella Atkins, African-American young girl, and they found her body disposed, no ID on it, but she had a very starched shirt and a crisp pleated skirt, and he said, you know, this was a young woman with hope. So he refashioned the skull into what he thought her face looked like, put hair on it, and tipped her chin upward, looking hopeful. And that little gesture of tipping the chin upward helped Rosella Atkins' family say, oh, that's her.
Yeah.
That was her. And, of course, then they did other investigation and found out Frank Bender was right. So these are the kind of miracles that he performed while he was alive.
You know, I teared up when I saw, again, I give John Walsh a lot of credit, the segment with him and John where they talked about Frank being sick. And
yeah.
It was so sad to see that. And really, Diane, we don't see a lot and we don't give enough credit to those Frank Benders that are out there that are just trying to help with the cases. We see all the you know, the Anthony cases and the experts come and testify and the big bucks that they get. But let's talk about that a little bit from your perspective as a reporter. Should there be more credit given to these individuals because we just seem to see the talking heads, the big shots out there, and not so much of the Frank Benders?
We don't see the soldiers on the front line.
Yep.
No, we don't. And, you know, Frank Bender was a guy who, again, didn't make much money at this. To make his bills, he worked on a tugboat.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To earn extra money to, you know, pay his electric bill, for example. But there are people not as talented as Frank, of course, but all across this country that go to work every day in law enforcement, and they do their little thing. You know, they check fingerprints, or they do DNA, or they patrol schoolyards, or whatever they do. And I get all teary when I talk about this,
yeah,
Dana, because they don't get enough.
No.
They don't get enough attention. And, you know, we think about our soldiers on the front line in Afghanistan and overseas in the Middle East, and well, we should. But we should also think about the people on the front lines here,
the home front,
who don't get any, they don't get any accolades. They work for, you know, way less than you and I make, and they have families, and they love their communities so much that they go into this work. And I write this syndicated column every week on crime and justice, and I try to always remember people like Frank Bender. When he passed away, I was really touched.
Yeah, absolutely. Diane Diamond's here. Yeah. You can check out her webpage at dianediamond.com. Let's talk about Aruba and this Gio Darno and Robin Gardner. And the story is, you know, it brings back so many memories of the Holloway case. Covered it, so did you, many, many times.
Yeah.
And I want to go from the angle of safety and these predator types, again, innocent until proven guilty. I understand that. But the Arubas that are out there, those types of places that these predators will go hang around. I know there was a connection between Robin Gardner and this guy. But how safe is a place like Aruba and others? And what should we do? Be doing more in the media to try and protect people when they go there?
Well, I'll tell you, the Aruba Chamber of Commerce is going to come down on my head now, Dana, but I have a daughter, and I don't want her going anywhere near Aruba.
Exactly.
And I have been to Aruba, and you know what? I'm never going back to Aruba.
Yeah.
Because their safety threshold there and their safety officers have shown me that Americans will probably... any foreign citizen just doesn't matter there.
Yep.
They don't care about keeping tourists safe. They don't patrol their beaches. They don't look out for foreigners. And I'm never going back. Now that said, what do you look for?
Yep.
You know, when your young person comes home and they say, "We're having a senior trip," or "We're having a junior trip," and "We're all going to Aruba," you know, my first inclination would be to say no. But some parents might want to say yes. Well, you know what? Then go with your child.
Yep.
I know that's not what they had in mind.
Absolutely.
But what did Natalie Holloway do? She wound up drinking in bars, got intoxicated, and the last thing her two girlfriends saw was her getting into a cab with Joran Vandersloot and two other guys.
Yep. Predators.
And she was never seen again.
Yep.
So unless you're there to chaperone them, you know what? Don't send them to Aruba.
Yeah, predators for sure. And this Gio Darno character, when we see the reports in the media, Diane, and the insurance policies and all that, it doesn't take much, you know, investigative reporting 101 to see the story. But I think what's important from Robin Gardner's family is to find her, just like Dave and Beth Holloway have both told me many times on this program. They just want to bring her home. Will we see Robin Gardner brought home, or has this guy done something that she'll never be found?
Well, I hope she will be found. I hope she'll be found alive.
I do too, yep.
But I don't have a lot of hope on that right now. Look, when I was covering Natalie Holloway, I learned that there is a section off the Aruban Island. It's a little tiny island, really. But there's one section that has a sheer cliff. And off that cliff, for decades and decades, the local butchers would throw their meat scraps and their bones, and they'd throw them into the ocean. And they created a natural shark pit.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people I talked to on Aruba said, that's where Natalie Holloway wound up. That's why you never found her body. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. But if it's true, this could be where Robin Gardner turns up.
Sure.
Well, she won't turn up. That's the sad thing about it. Look, after all this time, you've seen the Aruban pictures on television where they're searching and searching. It's flat.
Yeah.
It's desolate. There's a little group of cactus here or there, or, you know, if there's a body laying out, it would have been found by now.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not, I'm not very hopeful for her. I want to add one other thing. You know, we know that this Giordano bought a $1.5 million life insurance on this young woman and on himself before they went on this trip. Eh, you know, a lot of people buy travel insurance. But remember that this young woman had just lost her job.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Gardner was at a time in her life, you know, so many people are unemployed. They don't know what to do. They have no hope. I'm wondering if she didn't go in league with this man that she'd met online and had a sort of long-distance relationship with a year and a half, to go ahead and apply for that life insurance and then let's fake my death and we'll get $1.5 million and mm-hmm. it all went awry and she's gone and he's going to have the money.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so cynical. You know, I've seen a lot of things happen, so I wonder about that.
Yep.
Maybe she is still alive, and she's waiting to cash in on the life insurance that's never going to come now. I don't know what to think about it, but I do think the worst at this point.
You know, and exactly. There's a lot more to come in this story. Diane Diamond is here. Check out her website by clicking the link in the show notes. I want to, because I know you covered the Anthony case extensively, and get your thoughts on Dr. Phil, George, and Sydney, and now Casey having to serve her probation. You don't have to think much as far as the argument goes that she served her probation in jail. That was nonsense, that she'll have to serve her probation now. But really, I don't see that as a big story. I think what the big story will be now is George and Cindy on Dr. Phil. And does anybody really want to hear more about this story and the whole for-profit thing?
You know, I covered OJ. I covered Michael Jackson. I was around the Scott Peterson case, although I didn't cover it so much. I have never seen such public outcry and outrage about a human being as I have with Casey Anthony and her parents,
yep.
George and Cindy, who Cindy especially was found to have, you know, been tripped up in testimony and whatnot. I am surprised that the Dr. Phil people are having them on. Now, they say, I happen to know the executive producer of that show, Carla Pennington, she's a friend of mine, and they have publicly said that they're not paying the Anthonys anything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay.
Call me cynical again.
Sure.
But they've got this foundation for Kaylee, and I know that they've gone to other programs and asked for $350,000, $400,000 and been turned down. So I don't know whether Dr. Phil's paying or not, but I do know that they are somehow trying to turn the tide of public opinion or capitalize on public opinion after their daughter was found not guilty. I don't buy it. I mean, will I watch it? Yes, because I'm a reporter and I need to watch it. If Casey writes a book, will I buy it? Oh, I guess I'll have to because I'm a reporter and I have to read it.
Right.
But there's a groundswell out there that I don't think any of these things are going to be very successful. No. I mean, do you?
No, I think the Joe and Mary six-packs out there in North America that sit at home and were fascinated with the story but then saw how the system failed, so to speak, no, they're sick of it, and they won't buy it. They won't watch it. There'll be that group that will. But, you know, even seeing Casey's picture show up on TMZ, if those pictures weren't supplied to TMZ by somebody in the inner circle, I would, you know, eat my hat that I'm not wearing right now. But to try and keep this story alive, Diane, in the system, and to turn the public opinion, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. There's a lot more important stories to tell. Now, we got about 3 minutes. I want to get your thoughts on the West Memphis case. We've all seen the stories. You compare 1993, I think it was, to 2011, you know, small police jurisdiction, it may be incompetence. All of a sudden now these guys are out, so to speak. Did they do it? Didn't they do it? But let's talk about that, Diane Diamond, covering a case in 1993 to covering a case today.
Well, first of all, we have much more technology now to tell us what's right and what isn't right. You know, there's always a modicum of guesswork for a jury or for reporters, frankly, in a mystery like a murder, and in this case, a triple murder. You know, today I'm going to tell you in Memphis, they are not going to release three people accused of murdering children, semi-castrating one of the children, unless they have the forensic evidence to back that up. I can't pretend, really, Dana, to know this story or really understand this story very well. I don't know how it came about or why they have done this with these people, but I know that the stigma is never going to go away from them.
No.
They better get the heck out of town, because if they don't, I mean, you saw the outrage at the press conference that they had with the three young men who were, well, now they're not so young, were released.
Right.
It's very raw in that area about that crime. Now, I will say they served 18 years, and there are a lot of crimes, a lot of murders, in which the murderer, the convicted person, does not serve 18 years.
That's right. Yeah.
So I know that that's not what the victims' families want to hear.
No.
But, you know, Damian Eccles, Jason Baldwin, and Jesse Miskelly are out now, and that's the way it is. And I don't think they're ever going to go back. I don't know what more to say about it than that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the course of our justice system, and sometimes we don't like it.
Yeah.
We didn't like Casey Anthony. We might not have liked O.J. Simpson. This one maybe doesn't sit right with people, but I just can't think that the state would let them go unless they have the forensic evidence to back it up.
Yeah, it's hard to say, and I think the story is far from being over. But Diane Diamond, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks again.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, we had an earthquake here today. It was very strange.
I heard that. And
it was very strange. The worst thing I had was a lawn chair fell over in the yard.
Okay.
So that was about it.
I'm glad you're okay.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks for having
me. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Diane Diamond. You see her on Entertainment Tonight. She's been in the business for a long time and covered all the stories. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with criminal profiler Pat Brown, continue on with her thoughts about West Memphis and Aruba. I'm Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. It's always a big kick to have Pat Brown, criminal profiler, on the program. I understand Pat offered up her seat in the earthquake shelter to Casey Anthony today. I'm not sure about that.
No.
Are you okay? You were in the earthquake zone. Everything okay?
Yeah, it was very, very creepy, though, I have to admit. I've been through some California shakers, and usually I just kind of snickered, and I'm not saying that there aren't bigger ones in California, but this was a very weird, weird feeling one. It was very, very long, and it just went on and on and got louder and louder, the sound, and it was very creepy. And, you know, the thing that really got us here in D.C. is we just never had one.
Yeah.
100 years was the last time there was one in the area. And so, of course, your reaction is, what the heck is this? And you think of a bunch of other stuff before you think of an earthquake. So we're all kind of slow on the uptake and realizing what was going on. But it was quite amusing. After we left our house and actually did run into our front yard, that we saw neighbors just flying out of the houses, going, oh, my God, it's an earthquake. You know, so it had its amusing moments, too.
Well,
but everybody in D.C. is fine. And that joke that I put on Twitter that they could, people could send money to the D.C. Earthquake Survivors Fund. Come on, guys.
you're still waiting
not
for that money.
Send the money to my PayPal.
Absolutely, Pat Brown is here, and you know it was. I was watching the news coverage, and even the news folks were going crazy. I saw one report that the Washington Monument was going to fall over, and
there's actually a picture. So it's kind of like leaning, and it's supposed to be kind of a hoax. But the only damage we've had, which I've heard like 700,000 times now, is that the spires on the Washington Cathedral had some damage, and that's really the biggest damage we have in Washington, which is why I made the joke about the Washington D.C. Survivors Fund, because we really did get very lucky, and we had, you know, considering It was fairly, a fairly strong earthquake.
Absolutely.
We actually really had no damage at all to speak of.
Absolutely. The only damage that seems to be there lately is the Congress, but we won't get into that.
let's not go there.
Pat Brown's
That's
here.
Another program.
Speaking of disasters, let's talk about Aruba. Here we go again. Is it about Aruba? Of course not in this case with Giordano, but the system, the Aruban system is being looked at. But from the profiler perspective, Pat, I want you to talk about these, Aruba, in my opinion, and I've said this for years now, is really not a very safe place. And when you get the predators...
Why is that?
The predators that are roaming, they know that...
What predators that are roaming Aruba?
I know. Well, I can think of...
One creepy dude. I mean, if we actually are realistic,
yep.
And we look around any of our cities and any of our hot spots too for going on lovely vacations, women disappear from those places all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And catch them either. So,
but would it make sense that Giordano would go to Aruba because he knows, and some have said this, that this is a place where he might get away with it?
I think that Giordano is. He appears to be very psychopathic to me in his behaviors and in his history. And there is one kind of weird thing that they tend to do, which is not think things through that clearly.
Yeah.
They get these half-baked ideas, and so in their own mind they haven't clearly made determinations that, I'm going to do this exact thing. And we see he has kind of bizarre behavior. We see he's not the brightest camper out there, so
no.
we can bet that he didn't think anything through here. I think there were a number of things. Aruba to him was a way to entice women.
Sure. Yeah.
Secondly, he did have kind of a thing for Jan van der Sloot. I think he did admire him as mm-hmm. being a swinging dude. Who got all the ladies and got rid of some of the ladies. I think he liked the power that Jan van der Sloot had. So to him, that was just impressive. So it was like going to the home of somebody you admire. So I think maybe he hooked that up in his head with Aruba. I don't know if he really was going down there because he thought they were total idiots and the police were idiots and he'd get away with things. Because the only reason this really happened here in Van der Sloot is because of the political issues and his father being who his father was.
Yeah.
In this case, they don't give a crap about Giordano. They'd be happy to put him away, especially because they screwed up the last time around. And I think they're doing the best they can. I just don't think they're just not finding the physical evidence.
Exactly. And how hard are they going to try to get it right this time? Pat Brown is here.
Well, it's kind of like looking for Susan, Susan Powell.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look how long they've been looking for Susan Powell. Maybe Josh didn't do anything to Susan when he took his long journey into the snowstorm, but how many people believe that? And, it's a very similar case here, that this man apparently, from what I can see, he left the restaurant. We have the last picture now with him and Robin. She was dressed in a nice little outfit, and she had shoes on her feet, and she's walking behind him with her purse on her, over her arm, toward the vehicle. Obviously, they get in the vehicle, and she doesn't come back. So he did something to her when he left that restaurant. I believe he took her someplace. I think they maybe argued. He wanted something from her. She didn't want to give it to him. And something ensued. And I think that's crime scene one.
Yep.
And then I think at that point he had to do something with her. And he drove around, some of the, more isolated areas that weren't too far away because he only had so much time to work with. So he drove around till he found something and dropped her there and then came back and said, she's gone missing. That's what I think the evidence is looking like. But that would be the same thing we're looking at with Josh Powell. So why can't we find these women?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and of course, both men will say, one man says because she ran off with somebody, and the other one said because she drowned in a snorkeling accident. We don't believe either one of them, but we can't find the women.
Yeah. Drew Peterson still says Stacy has a boyfriend.
Stacy went, didn't she go to Thailand with her?
Yeah, is living happily ever after somewhere. Pat Brown is here. Let's go from Aruba, and I don't want to go there anyway because it's too creepy.
I do. Baby Beach looks lovely to me, and I'm not going to take anybody like Giordano with me. I'm not going to go pick up some dude in the bar, and I don't know.
I know you're.
So I think as long as I don't do that, I'm going to be perfectly fine.
You're going to look after yourself. I know that. And when I talked about there's not guys in trench coats with nothing on underneath and dark sunglasses at every corner.
Yeah, women need to use a little
common sense.
Bit more common sense, and it would help them greatly, because, you know, they're obviously, you know, they don't deserve to get killed by these guys, but unfortunately they're making some bad choices to be alone with guys they shouldn't be trusting.
So true, so true. Let's talk about West Memphis. We've seen many cases, 1993 compared to 2011. Some have used the term checkbook journalism when it comes to this case. HBO got involved, and did they do it? Didn't they do it? I want to get your perspective, Pat, on the West Memphis case.
Well, you know, I have long looked at this case, and I come up with the fact that I think that they were fairly convicted.
Yep.
I cannot come up with anybody else I believe committed this crime. I believe the evidence does point to them. Circumstantial, the majority of it is, I think it points to them. I profiled the crime. The profile of the crime that I did points to the crime occurring at that location. I do not believe they were killed someplace else and dumped in Robin Hood Hills. I mean, I believe they were killed right there. And it looks like a thrill crime to me, and a crime committed by more than one person. So, you know, I can't come up with anybody but the West Memphis Three. But one of the problems we have with this case. And I, you know, people are wondering why this whole thing went down. Why did the prosecution allow this Alford plea, and why did these guys take it?
Sure. Yep.
And from both sides, both sides had to do it. The prosecution was suffering from being beaten for two decades, beaten down, being told that there was police misconduct, juror misconduct. Prosecutors, everybody was a horrible bunch of people, and all this money came in from Hollywood, and every film being made about it was against them, or it's against them, and everyone is supporting the West Memphis Three's innocence. And as an expert in this field, and, you know, I've spoken up, I've been beaten down horribly, not just people disagreeing with me, which is fine, you know, because I think people can believe in their innocence and, you know, fight for that. I think that's okay. But there's been a very, very big campaign against anybody speaking up on this case, and you just get horribly abused. Well, this has been going on for the prosecution for two decades. Now, if the supporters are absolutely correct, then you have to kind of say, wow, you know, isn't it great that they never gave up?
Yep.
Isn't this a wonderful story that, you know, they fought for the innocent, these guys that were, you know, wrongly imprisoned? So on one hand, if there are innocent, you can feel really think the supporters are fantastic. If, on the other hand, they weren't wrongly imprisoned, all the media and this large amounts of people are beating down the prosecution and the police and supporting people that should be supported. So here we have the situation where the defense now has come up with a supposed piece of evidence, and the defense keeps, you know, working at it, trying to come up with every shred of anything they can to give reasonable doubt. Well, they came up with a hair from Terry Hobbs, and that's the reasonable doubt right now. And I think the prosecution said, you know, they're eventually going to get their appeal. They're going to get their appeal.
Yep.
And then we're going to have a Casey Anthony situation. Because we're going to go back to court. The defense has a huge amount of money. The jurors are going to come in, and they're going to be presiding over, you know, this case is now two decades old. These guys already spent two decades in prison, and they're going to probably find some reasonable doubt because they're not going to be able to follow they may not be able to follow the circumstantial evidence well enough, as we've seen with the Casey Anthony case. So now the question is, I think the prosecution believes they do have enough evidence to convict. They did it twice, but I think they think with the 18 years, by 20 years by the time they got to court, it's too much of a risk. They just don't want to go back, because then they could lose the case, and then they're going to be proven to be wrong, and then they're going to be sued crapless in the civil court suit. So, you know, it becomes a financial nightmare. So I think they thought, you know, give these guys the Alford plea. Now, the West Memphis Three, on the other hand, obviously they didn't feel strong enough themselves about going back to court, because they probably know the evidence is pretty good. And what if that jury does understand the evidence this time around again?
Yep.
And they get reconvicted. They don't want to take that chance, so they're going to take the Alford plea. So
yep.
Both sides decided, because they didn't want to roll the dice on the jury, to both do it.
Yep.
And that way, these guys get out, and the prosecution can, you know, say, well, at least they were there for 20 years, and they pled guilty, so, and we're not going to be sued, and they basically said that we were right. So everybody goes home happy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's something else, and I agree with you. And it's interesting to see how much Hollywood has got involved. One last question, Pat, before we go on the Anthony case, and we've discussed the jury system many times, you and I, and how it needs to be looked at. And you're so right. Now we have George and Cindy going on Dr. Phil, and with all the public outrage, is anybody really going to give a damn, or is he going to get huge ratings? Which I think he might.
It's going to get huge ratings, probably. You know, there's a lot of people who are outraged and are going to probably not watch the show, but there's always enough people who get curious and will, and that's what they're depending on, that some, you know, they're going to still do it. You know, I don't strictly see what the thrill of it is. I mean, I personally can't stand watching either one of them, and especially when Cindy shows up, I'd rather just hit that off button really quickly before I throw up. I cannot stand watching her play her, you know, little sympathy ploys. Oh, look at me, poor me. I, you know, have suffered so much and blah blah blah. And I just can't tolerate it. And so I won't watch. But there's going to be somebody who will. And so that's why, you know, Dr. Phil's going to want to do it.
Yep.
And of course he's claiming that the money is going to the fund to help. I don't know what's helping.
The foundation. Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty appalling situation. I wish everybody would just leave them alone and just say we're not going to honor George and Cindy, who helped a murderer get off, in my opinion.
Yep.
You know, by obstructing justice, both in the police investigation and in the courtroom. I don't see why we should give them the time of day.
I agree. The time of day is always here for you, Pat. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you so much, Dana.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye. That's Pat Brown, criminal profiler. Always fun to be on the show. She speaks her mind, and sometimes she gets into a little bit of trouble over it, but she's never been one to back down. That's it. That's tonight's show. I'm glad to be back. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, and I encourage you all to check out ScaredMonkeysRadio.com for live programs, podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries. You can leave comments, and, of course, the blog scaredmonkeys.com is a place to go and check out all the crime stories. And don't forget blinkoncrime.com and send Blink some get well wishes and maybe a virtual Kleenex or two to get her feeling better. That's it. That's tonight's show. We'll see you again real soon. Good night.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.